even commit themselves to one. And we remember just one resolution of security, the United Nations Security Council against Iraq. Iraq was destroyed, and this, more than 2 million people lost in Iraq because of that. But the Zionist entity being all along as an advanced military base to the West, and this is the way and the we should look at it. It's part of the almighty armada of the United States of America, and they permitted to cleanse Palestine, and they are, since 1917 till today, through even 1948, when they commit the Nakba, they're trying to commit the Nakba on Palestine by eliminating any sort of life in Palestine, keeping erasing the population to get rid of the population out of Palestine. This is the target, and this is why you can see all along before the genocide in Gaza now, the Western media were the Zionist entity, its darling, and they were always producing the best images and the best stories accompanying that, even trying to cover up and whitewash today's the genocide. So all tools of the West are geared up to protect the Zionist entity and to provide it with immunity against the international community. And that is the main reason.
Now, before Batul joins us, tell me why there is no measure taken, no specific measure taken to stop this war machine against the children. Because, as you said, a lot of the countries are taking sides, said or unspoken, that they're taking sides with the Israeli regime in the collective West. But at the same time, they can be firm in their condemnation of killing children, but they do not do that. The silence sometimes amounts to indifference. What needs to be done in order to make a difference?
The silence is deafening, to put it that way. The United Nations Children Fund, UNICEF, has confirmed that the Zionist occupation airstrikes killed over 200 children in Gaza in just a few days. And all along, the Zionist entity, we can see them, if you look back, they are targeting the Palestinian children with intent to kill or to disable, or put it differently, with the phrase they use, to neutralize. You're talking about a child. During the first Intifada, 1987, a Swedish TV crew caught live on camera a group of soldiers breaking the arms and limbs of Palestinian children, even the age of 7 and 8, with large rocks. And the army commander who was responsible for that atrocity in the year 2002 replaced the former prime minister Yehuda Barak and became the leader of the Labour, lefty Zionist Labour Party. So all the political spectrum of the Zionist entity, Likud, Labour, left, right, are committed to the policy of destroying the indigenous Palestinian people. And many of children, we were being even shot and even kidnapped by soldiers for organ harvest. During the 2018 Gaza Great Return March, which is used to happen the weekend every week, peaceful protest, and you can see so many injuries from the Zionist entity snipers, the soldiers targeting the kids, and just causing them death or disabilities, life-changing disabilities.
Right, Saim, as Batul has not joined us, very good to have you on the program, Batul. Now, I'm going to talk about the effects of war and this Israeli war machine against the children on that mental health. This is a really important issue. The collective West, the international community in its totality, seems to be very sensitive, or at least pretends to be very sensitive when it comes to women's rights and children's rights. But how come when it comes to the children of Gaza, the women of Gaza, they seem to be really not caring?
Of course, that is because international law does not apply to the Israeli occupation entity that has been given immunity from all kinds of criticism. And that's something that they've even sought to embed within the law itself. So, for example, the whole conflation of anti-Zionism with anti-Semitism in order to protect the occupation entities become this untouchable entity that you are not allowed to, even on the level of criticize. And that's because we know that Israel is America's pet project and it is protected by it unconditionally. And as your guest has alluded to, what on earth has the UN done to stop this genocide? But ultimately, these past 10 months have shown the dirty face of the capitalist structure that is ruling the world, and I think has really removed the masks of deception, because such a scale of atrocity has not happened since World War II, where you had all of these conventions and all of these agreements to prevent such a genocide from happening. And that's shown to be complete lies in front of the real test that we are now seeing materially on the ground. But of course, the mass people are waking up to the realities on the ground, because the mass people now use social media and they're seeing the footage for themselves of charred babies, of babies that are completely burnt, 6 months into this war. And the statistics were that 1 in 50 of Gaza's children are killed or injured. Children are, let's be clear, intentional targets of the Israeli occupation entity. It's not normal for 70% of those killed to be women and children. And that's because Israel's plan for the Palestinians is ethnic cleansing. The war is not against the Gazan resistance per se, it's against the collective Palestinian people, because the people themselves are the resistance. Just identifying as a Palestinian, you are condemned to death, because the contention of the Israeli occupation entity is with the entire existence of the Palestinian people. But by targeting specifically the Palestinian children, they are targeting what is effectively the most precious thing to the mothers of Gaza, to the families. And so what they seek to do is they seek to create defeatism through targeting what they consider to be the weakest and the most kind of emotional point in all of this, and that is the children. But what does this do to the psychology of the children is the question that you've asked. Children are so innate, they're so pure in their disposition. Children reject evil. What is there that the children of Gaza haven't seen in terms of charred bodies, limbs everywhere? I mean, the children of Gaza can probably identify what bombs are falling just from the sound that they make. So these children that are smelling death everywhere, that's become their common sense. That's become their new normal, just witnessing death. These children will grow up and they will seek justice. So expect that it is this very generation of children that will liberate Palestine. The genocide was just the catalyst or the recruiter for this, if you will, but it's reaffirmed everything for these children about the nature of their enemy that they knew prior to the genocide. Because also, let's be clear that prior to the genocide, the children in Gaza were living under exceptionally poor mental health due to the very poor quality of life that was imposed by the blockade, which the UN literally described as an open-air prison. You know, this was prior to October the 7th. Families and friends that are completely separated from one another, complete restriction on movement, complete restriction on access to essential services. They had absolutely no minimum quality of life.
Right, Saeb, as Batul just said, regarding what she said about the ethnic cleansing, we have footage from Gaza where you can, and the West Bank, of course, where you can see that the Israeli soldiers are even more persistent in targeting, with their snipers, targeting children and women rather than the grown-up men. They know that this is going to be like planting the seeds of anger and vengeance in that territory. Why are they still so committed to doing that? Are they feeding off the tragedy?
All along, they wanted to create what they call it, something they call the Netanyahu lately talking about existential threat for their nation and the total victory. Total victory, it means from the even the 50s, 60s, they've been talking about this, to implant in the Palestinian psyche that they are a defeated nation. So a defeated nation will act in the land as enslaved people, or leave or die, as they said with the statement lately after the October the 7th with intent to genocide to the Palestinian people to accept to be enslaved or to die or to leave. This all along they've been repeated that. In a report of the Amnesty International in December last year, they concluded Israel's intent is the physical destruction of the Palestinian people in Gaza. So their genocide campaign is target the Palestinian people. They can cover that up by saying they are looking at a military target within a United Nations compound or something. These lies nobody believes, but the United States of America and the West wanted anything so they can toss at their own people and keep going the genocide, because the intention is to cleanse all the Palestinian out of Palestine. Trump himself, before he was elected, said Israel is tiny. What today we see? We see today Israel expanding in the south of Lebanon. Today took nearly a quarter of the size of Syria from the Golan Heights and Yarmouk and Dar'a and the Jabal al-Sheikh Mount Hiron. And all of, and they are planning to extend to reach Euphrates River near Iraq. So all of that is done with policies designed and supported by the United States of America's politicians and the state as a whole, or Democrat or Republican. This is built within the whole entity of the United States of America. So this is part of why the genocide came in. There is a United Nations inquiry 10 days ago talking about the genocide and the genocidal acts and humanitarian violations committed by the Zionist entity in Gaza against women and against the productive services, reproductive services of the hospitals, and how to eliminate the ability of the Palestinian women and girls to be healthy and to destroy in the future any hope for the Palestinian to even to be able to give birth. This is part of the United Nations investigation. And if you want to hear the crimes committed against the children who they kidnap and imprison in there, they've been raped. Before October the 7th, there was a report which is confirming for the international community the rape of children in the prisons. And before, and they were denying it, but they buried it, and they buried all of these reports after the October the 7th. And there is a lot of witnesses, eyewitnesses can tell you, and they give testaments to what happened to the children in jails. Some children disappears, forced disappear, children dies, right. Children came mentally disturbed or physically disabled.
Right, Batul, I'm going to borrow the concept of destruction that Saeb just mentioned, and I'm going to expand it to psychological side and effects of it. Do you think that by physically removing Palestinian homes, they're trying to deconstruct the concept of home and homeland in the mindset of the children in Gaza?
Oh, absolutely. That's essentially the foundations of the Israeli occupation entity. That is stealing the homes of the Palestinians and stealing the very land of the Palestinians. And we know that Netanyahu's strategy right now, through continuing this war in these past 18 months, has been also to create the most unbearable conditions for the Palestinian families to basically force them to mass migrate, to facilitate the depopulation plan that cannot be achieved by forceful means. The Palestinians have to want to leave, essentially. So they want to create the conditions so that they can encourage that mass movement and allow for a second Nakba to continue. There's no other solution the Israeli occupation entity is willing to accept. There's no concept of a two-state. It doesn't exist. One state, it cannot see Palestinians as humans. They're human animals as far as they're concerned. And it cannot re-besiege Gaza and recontrol Gaza with the Gazan resistance standing strong there today. So inflicting mass destruction that we've seen where 1.9 million out of the 2.2 million Gazans have been intentionally displaced because their homes have completely been destroyed. You know, that level of intent when it comes to mass destruction, that's not a sign of strength. That's a sign that you can't achieve anything using less destruction. So mass destruction is all that you can resort to. It means that you cannot achieve anything through political or through logical means. But this approach has proven futile with the Palestinians because they have constantly rejected displacement and they have ultimately remained steadfast in their land. But if we see Israel's strategy right now, it's not just the destruction of homes. All of Gaza is rubble. That includes schools that have been relentlessly bombed, the bakeries and the stores. So there's a lack of food, clean water, which is also creating a catastrophic hunger crisis where nearly every child now in Gaza is at risk of complete famine and dying from malnutrition and dehydration, compounded by the fact that they're completely cut off medical services, whether that's hospitals or whether that's even the medicine required to treat, you know, very simple illnesses and diseases, you know, compounded with the fact that 90% of the school buildings are completely damaged and destroyed. So there's no sense of the children of Gaza having normalcy going to school. You know, you hear that is usually one of the top priorities of the children that are interviewed in Gaza. What do you wish for? I wish that I can just go to school. I wish that I can just have my books. I wish that I can just play. You know, the children of Gaza have no escape from the reality of war. They have no stable routine. And of course, for many of them, for the vast majority of them, they have no family as well. And these are essentially the protective factors that allow the children to grow up well and healthy. But despite all of this, I just want to end this point by saying, we also see the footage of resilience that is coming out from Gaza. It's really unlike anything else. It's really miraculous. I don't think we've seen this anywhere else in the world. In terms of, you know, the children setting up schools, you know, school lessons on top of rubbles. We see the recitation, for example, of the Holy Quran in its entirety. You see that the children of Gaza are making use of the very little that they have materially. And this is, it is ultimately this spirit today that is fighting the enemy tanks. And it is this spirit that will prevail. So yes, materially speaking, we see nothing but destruction. But in reality, the Gazans have won because their morale has not been defeated. Their resilience has not been defeated. And that is the most important component in all of this, because this is ultimately a war of morale. And if you fail to weaken the morale of the people, otherwise right. We would have seen the mass migration of the Palestinians and we would have seen Gaza being taken over by Israel.
Right, Betul, as you just said, miraculous is the word in describing what we are witnessing in Gaza. Now, Saeb, what do you think should be done by the international community to undo what the atrocious acts of the Israeli regime is doing to the community in Gaza?
Allow me to show you this, if you can see it. Can you see that child?
Yes, of course, yeah.
Yeah, that child is my cousin's daughter. She was killed 2 days ago near the United Nations barracks Rafah, while they are being evicted. Her name is Mira. She's 4 years of age. And what you can imagine, her parents, both of them, were injured. And the child lost her life straight on the spot. Children cannot sustain injuries from a blast like adults because their bodies are tiny and they have less blood in their body. So they die from these such injuries. The children of Gaza are targeted. The children of Gaza, they are the number one victim, and then the women. And the Zionist entity's designs. So when you see a child like that, you relate to, and you know, it makes the pictures more vivid, more clear. As my colleague, what she's saying, I second that 100%. She's right. But at the same time, the international community are watching. And they are, since 17 months or 16 and a half months now, they doing at all nothing at all. to help the Palestinian people. The Islamic Cooperation Council doing nothing. The Arabic League doing nothing. Except the only people who's doing is the resistance axis like Yemen and Iran and Lebanese resistance. This is the only people who's helping the Palestinians. But apart from that, there is no one taking the noble position of supporting the Palestinian and demanding a stop for such genocide. Because till now, over 3.5% of the population of Gaza being wiped out or injured. And you took this percentage and compare it to any country in the world, United States of America, you're talking about millions or a different country. So in here, we call on humanity and all the international actors, state actors or non-state actors, to stop this maniacs, Zionist, fascist, Nazist entity from keep committing genocide against people. And trust me, all of that can stop with one phone call from Trump to Netanyahu.
Thank you so much. Once again, both of you, Batul Sobeti, activist and political analyst, joining us from London, and Saeb Shah, author and commentator, joining us from Belfast. Once again, Saeb, I'm really sorry for the loss in your family. Once again, this is a loss for the entire humanity. And thank you, our audience, for staying with us on another Spotlight.
Insights into the Holy Quran.
Indeed, this Quran guides to what is most upright and gives the good news to the faithful who do righteous deeds, that there is a great reward for them.
In the name of Allah, the Compassionate, the Merciful, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Assalamu Alaikum. Welcome to another edition of the program, Insights into the Holy Quran, by Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, a graduate of the Hausa Seminary of Qom. Please stay with us.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. In the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful. Hello everyone, brothers and sisters. I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi with you with another edition of Insights into the Holy Quran. In this edition of the program, we'll discuss some of the contents of chapter Naml, the 27th chapter of the Holy Quran, as well as some of the commentary points of the verses. Brothers and sisters, we have reached 67th and 8th verses of Surah An-Naml. Now let's listen to these two verses.
Bismillahirrahmanirrahim.
In the name of Allah, the entirely merciful, the especially merciful.
وقال الذين كفروا أإذا كنا ترابا وآباؤنا أئنا لمخرجون.
And those who disbelieve say, when we have become dust as well as our forefathers, will we indeed be brought out of the graves?
لقد وعدنا هذا نحن وآباؤنا من قبل إن هذا أساطير الأولين.
We have been promised this, we and our forefathers before. This is not but legends of the former peoples.
So, brothers and sisters, up to this point, we finished the part and section where the questions asked by the pagans were about the existence of the Almighty Allah, the origination, and of course, they doubted about the hereafter as well, and the most important thing, أَإِلَهُ مَعَ اللَّهُ, this question that was repeatedly asked in the previous verses was towards the pagans, who still think that there is another God with the Almighty Allah. Now, one of the things that the enemies do is to create doubts in ideological subjects. And if we do not accept a fact, it is not a reason that it will not occur, but or it does not exist. So this verse states the logic of rejectors of the resurrection in one sentence. It says, وَقَالَ الَّذِينَ كَفَرُوا, and those who disbelieve say, أَإِذَا كُنَّا تُرَابًا وَآبَاؤُنَا أَإِنَّا لَمُخْرَجُونَ, when we have become dust, and our fathers too, shall we certainly be brought forth again? So, they actually only suffice to this matter, that it is impossible that a man becomes dust and comes to life again, while they were dust at first and they came into being from dust. Is not it possible that they return to dust and then come forth for new life? It is interesting that there are 8 instances in the Holy Quran with the same meaning, wherein, as soon as they come to imagination of impossibility of hereafter, they have paved the path of denial. Then they add, لَقَدْ وَعِدْنَا هَذَا نَحْنُ وَآبَاؤُنَا, indeed, we had been promised this, we and our fathers before too, وَآبَاؤُنَا مِنْ قَبْلِ. And the verse continues saying, إِنْ هَذَا إِلَّا أَسَاطِيرُ الْأَوَّلِينَ. So these things that you are saying, these are not but fables of the ancients. So they say that they were promised it before, but they found no sign of it. So these promises are not anything but imaginations and superstitions. So they begin from impossibility of the occurrence of hereafter, and after that, they take it as the foundation of an absolute denial. We'll discuss more after a short break.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad.
So, dear listeners, these two verses actually discuss the main argument of the enemies of those ones who deny the existence of hereafter, and actually those pagans. They say in one sentence, أَإِذَا كُنَّا تُرَابًا وَآبَاؤُنَا أَيْنَا لَمُخْرَجُونَ, when we have become dust and our fathers too, shall we certainly be brought forth again? So, in their minds, it is impossible to become dust and come to life again. Yet, they do not pay attention to their selves. They do not pay enough attention to their own beings. Because how did they come into this world in the very first place? They became existent from dust, from turab. But they do not know. They are not aware of it. لَقَدْ وَعِدْنَا هَذَا نَحْنُ وَآبَاؤُنَا مِنْ قَبْلِ إِنْ هَذَا إِلَّا أَسَاطِيرُ الْأَوَّلِينَ. So these things that we have been promised previously, and our fathers were promised too, these are nothing but fables of the ancients. So this is the argument of the pagans. But they begin from the impossibility of occurrence of hereafter, and they take it as the foundation of absolute denial. It seemed that they expected resurrection that happens very soon. So, since they did not see it in their own lifetime, they negated it. However, these statements are the sign of their pride and negligence. And let us remember the fact that through this wrong interpretation, they wanted to belittle the Prophet's words about hereafter. They wanted to say that this is one of the baseless old promises which others gave to their ancestors, and they were misguided, some of their ancestors, as they claim, and it was not a new matter for them to be dealt with. So they actually say that we are quite accustomed to these old fables of ancient, and we know how to deal with it. Thank you, dear listeners, for staying with us in this episode. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Don't be saddened by what you see, by all the lies and treachery. Life is cruel, but don't worry. In your heart lies the key to unwind all the secrets. This life we see.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Also, visit our website at parstoday.ir. Until the next program, take care.
Things always worked for me. Worry ends when faith begins.
Follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest global developments. You can keep in touch with us by following us on Twitter at twitter.com/ParsTodayEN. You can also follow IRIB English Radio on Instagram via instagram.com/ParsTodayEnglish.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Poreza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Amin Alemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Round the world with reporters.
The male surgical department inside Nasser Medical Complex in Central Khan Yunis, the last haven for those wounded or injured by the Israeli attacks to survive. This place has been turned into blackened ruin as it was targeted last night by the Israeli occupation. At least one airstrike was launched here, destroying this department that was filled with dozens of the patients and the wounded Palestinians who were fighting for their lives. And as the place was set on fire following the attacks, all the patients and the medical crews here were in a state of panic and just rushing to evacuate instantly, but unfortunately, 10 of them, 8 were injured and 2 were killed by this attack, including a 16-year-old child. This place, despite being inside the heart of the Nasser Medical Complex, was deliberately targeted by the Israeli occupation, turning it into ruins.
Hospitals and medical personnel are protected under international and humanitarian law. However, the occupation knows no boundaries or laws. It deliberately targeted this department, rendering it out of service after it had caused the collapse of the medical sector across the Gaza Strip. 2 people were killed, and the rooms in this department, including the oxygen station, were destroyed. This is the only male surgical department here, and now we are forced to treat the remaining wounded, who are now injured for the second time, in inadequate and unsuitable conditions. This is a war crime, and we urge the international community to hold the occupation accountable and prevent such atrocities.
Now, this department is officially out of service. All the patients that were here last night and survived the attack were moved by the medical crews here to other facilities and departments here inside the hospital, where they are now uncertain where exactly and how to receive treatment, because they did survive the previous attacks by the occupation, and now they were targeted again, making them sure that no place is safe in Gaza. Ahmed al-Najjar, Khan Yunis.
The Israeli bombardment has decimated educational institutions across Gaza and the occupied West Bank, making it nearly impossible for Palestinian students to pursue their studies. Schools and universities have turned to rubble, leaving thousands in despair. But for some, hope still shines. 7 Palestinian students have reached Pakistan to continue their education, with more expected soon. For Palestinian students, education is not just about degrees. It's about survival. Despite losing their homes and universities, they refuse to let the Israeli war define their future. Al-Khidmat Foundation has stepped forward, taking full responsibility for their education and living expenses. These students will enroll in different disciplines in Pakistani universities, ensuring that war does not rob them of their dreams.
We are from Gaza. And since the war, Israeli war in Gaza, all the universities are distracted and stop studying, and this will stop the educational process in Gaza. So we are taking this choice to go to Pakistan to continue our studies there.
I'm a teacher assistant at the university. I have studied 5 years of computer engineering at the university, and I came here to continue my studying master degree at data science at university for data science.
This isn't the first time Pakistan has opened its door to Palestinian students. Last year, Palestinian medical students arrived in Lahore, reflecting the resilience of a generation fighting for its future.
We believe education is the strongest form of resistance. We stand with our Palestinian brothers and will ensure they get the education they deserve.
As Israeli aggression continues, their right to education remains under attack in Palestine. But these students prove that no amount of destruction can erase their will to learn. Mohammed Turi, Karachi.
Students at prestigious Georgetown University protested in defense of the latest academic detained and scheduled for deportation by the administration of Donald Trump, Badr Khan Suri, their professor at the school's Center for Muslim-Christian Understanding.
One, we are demanding the release of Dr. Suri. 2, we are demanding that this university become a sanctuary campus, which means the university must not allow ICE, DHS, and MPD onto campus, and the university must not aid in the arrest and deportation of students. And 3, we are demanding complete divestment from entities complicit in the ongoing genocide in Palestine.
Hundreds of protesters have been arrested recently across the United States at rallies for deported scholars, many for the most notorious deportation case, that of Mahmoud Khalil at Columbia University in New York City. Both Suri and Khalil were legal U.S. residents, married to American citizens, and never charged with breaking any laws. Unlike Khalil, Suri was not involved in political activism, but was still charged with allegedly spreading pro-Hamas propaganda.
One academic's deportation read, quote, "Your presence or activities in the United States would have adverse consequences for the foreign policy of the United States." The question is, adverse for whom?
We can see through the military-industrial complex, the one that is making the ruling class in this country millions, billions of dollars, that if that was to be threatened, if Palestine was to be liberated, if the masses of this country actually are educated on what's happening and not being fed the U.S. propaganda around what we're seeing in the Middle East, it would be not detrimental to the U.S. foreign policy and the U.S. Domestic policy as well, but just more so detrimental to these people's pockets.
The United States is currently undergoing a lengthy anti-Palestinian witch hunt, which can only be compared to the anti-socialist Red Scares from 1917 to 1920, and then again from 1947 to 1957.
It hasn't just started with Donald Trump. You know, it's gotten much worse, but there was already, you know, efforts here on campus to repress pro-Palestinian speech. It's never been truly welcomed as free speech, even before Donald Trump.
A federal judge just blocked the deportation of Suri, but refused to release him back to his wife and three young children, and Suri remains in jail. Ramin Mazahari, Washington, D.C.
In the United States, he may be considered persona non grata. But here, South Africa's expelled ambassador Ibrahim Rasool is evidently loved and celebrated. A horde of supporters awaited him as he touched down after being condemned by the White House. In his first words to the public back on South African soil, the veteran politician said he stood by his comments and has no regrets.
In a very strange way, the fact that what I said caught the attention of the President and the Secretary of State and move them enough to declare me persona non grata, says that the message went to the highest office in the United States of America, that they were stung by our characterization and they were not happy with it. And so the diplomacy of Ubuntu has certainly worked because we bore witness to the values of our society.
The ancient African concept of Ubuntu says that life is premised on humanity to others, that no single entity is better than the other. And it is this principle that the ANC, even while seeking diplomatic engagement with the Trump administration, seeks to uphold.
This rally of support serves not only as a warm welcome for Ambassador Ibrahim Rasool, but also as a defiant protest against the United States for its position on South Africa. Washington's decision to expel Pretoria's envoy has garnered and sparked a strong amount of anti-American sentiment.
The consensus is that America's steps against South Africa is directly linked to its stance on Palestine. Rasool said trade deals could not trump principles.
We would have preferred to come here to say that we have won for you a goer, but we could not win it by withdrawing our case from the International Court of Justice against Israel, because as we stand here, the bombing has continued and the shooting has continued. And if South Africa was not in the ICJ, Israel would not be exposed and the Palestinians would have no hope.
Just as Israel's genocidal campaign against Palestine has exposed its true nature, for a South Africa which once took an affable posture towards the US, America has now shown its true hand, and South Africans are vociferously opposing it. Hassan Siri, Cape Town.
Another successful military operation was carried out by Yemen's armed forces, targeting both U.S. and Israeli positions, and once again forcing Israel to close one of its main airports.
The missile force of the Yemeni armed forces targeted Ben Gurion Airport in the occupied area of Jaffa with a hypersonic ballistic missile of the Palestine Type 2, and the operation achieved its goal successfully, thanks to God, which led to the suspension of air navigation at the airport for more than half an hour, as part of the response to the American aggression that launched dozens of raids on our country during the past hours. Our forces clashed with the American aircraft carrier USS Harry Truman and a number of hostile war pieces in the Red Sea, with a number of missiles and drones, and the confrontations lasted for several hours.
The latest military operations come amidst the pro-Palestinian You Are Not Alone conference held in the capital Sana'a, where Yemeni politicians and researchers joined to discuss growing U.S. and Zionist threats.
Our goal in this conference is to send a message to the Zionist enemy, the Americans and Britons, that no matter how much you attack Yemen, Palestine, Lebanon, or even if you attack Iran, you will never deter us from our firm position on the Palestinian cause.
According to one of the researchers at the conference, Arab Zionism is paving the way for Israel to continue its genocide in Gaza and expand its influence throughout the region.
Based on my research, I can say one of the main issues is Arab Zionism. Arab Zionism works hand in hand with the Zionists to push forward their agenda against the Arab and Islamic world. They work to demonize the resistance and engage in political maneuvers to achieve surrender and normalize ties with the Zionists in order to give up the Palestinian cause.
Yemeni experts expect that the U.S. and Israel are currently trying to convince Saudi Arabia and the UAE to join the military effort against Yemen. Yemen has warned that if that happens, Aramco oil facilities will be destroyed completely. For a week straight, the Yemeni armed forces have continued their retaliatory attacks against both American and Israeli positions. The U.S. has warned of sending more reinforcements to the Red Sea, which, according to Ansar Allah, will only result into more U.S. targets being hit. Yusuf Mawri, Sana'a.
A large crowd marched through the Austrian capital Vienna to express their support for the people and the resistance in Gaza. The Boycott Israel movement, BDS Austria, organized a demonstration coinciding with the international mobilization of Israeli Apartheid Week.
We have a responsibility to stand up and fight for what is right, because decolonizing Palestine is decolonizing the world.
The organizers collaborated with the Palestine Committee and Vienna's Iranian and Shia communities to mark Al-Quds Day. The participants and speakers stressed their continued solidarity with the anti-imperialist struggles in Palestine, Lebanon and Yemen. They emphasized that these struggles were inspired by the 1979 Islamic Revolution in Iran.
The Al-Quds Day, which is actually this week, because Ramadan, the holy month of Ramadan, is ending, the Al-Quds Day means that we have to fight against imperialism, we have to fight against Zionism, we have to support our brothers and sisters in Palestine, where the genocide is already again ongoing. And we have the duty to do our best to support them from here.
We are celebrating Al-Quds Day as the a way of sort of giving the people, and knowing that the people, let the people know that the Palestinian people have the right to live, they have a right to their land, and the occupation obviously has to stop.
Al-Quds Day is a wake-up call for all humankind to rally behind Palestine.
This wake-up call is really giving the people a type of understanding and what is going on in the world today and how we can solve this problem.
Saturday's demonstration was the largest in Vienna since the beginning of the year.
Colonialism continues. The Western states, including Austria, are continuing their colonial policy, which started in the 19th century. They support a colonial apartheid state, and Austria plays the same role in supporting this colonial policy as any other Western state.
A video emerged of a private meeting of the Israeli ambassador to Austria, in which he called for the murder of children in Gaza and claimed to have daily contact with the Austrian chancellor. The following day, hundreds marched through Vienna to mark Al-Quds Day and show their opposition to the pro-Israeli policy of the Austrian government. Dieter Reinisch, Vienna.
the resumption of Israeli genocide last week, over 600 Palestinians have been killed, including at least 200 children. In history, a large number of people also suffered critical injuries.
After the 18th of March, Israeli warplanes have carried out unprecedented attacks that we did not witness since April 2024. More than 1,000 attacks left 400 martyrs only on the first day, including 200 children and 80 women. 85% of civil defense capabilities were destroyed as well. The Israeli occupation uses both displacement and starvation as means of war. For more than 20 days, we are in a real starvation.
The situation in Gaza has dramatically worsened with the launch of Israel's ground invasion earlier this week, reigniting the never-stop genocide across the besieged territory and forcing almost 300,000 to flee their already ruined homes from northern and eastern parts of the Strip.
In the early morning, there was a very heavy and loud explosion in a nearby area. I couldn't move and got injured. It was horrific. We were already displaced, and now everything is worse. They committed a massacre in our neighborhood, killing 24 innocent people in a blink of an eye.
The United Nations Children's Fund, UNICEF, has condemned the aggression, calling it catastrophic for Gaza's young residents, and reported that more than 200 children were killed since Israel renewed its airstrikes and ground offensives on Tuesday, further deepening the humanitarian crisis in Gaza. The people of Gaza continue to endure the devastating consequences of a genocide that shows no sign of abating, with the loss of innocent lives, especially among the children, marking the tragic cost of the Israeli aggression. Ada Ibrahim, Gaza City.
This is A to Z. An introduction into an Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, keep iftar simple. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, welcome to A to Z with me, Sister Zainab here on IB English Radio, and obviously the title is self-explanatory, and it's this sort of constant reminder that I also make, and probably many people make, that, you know, we're not, that look, there's very many good reasons why we should keep our iftar simple, and we can include suhoor, but obviously people don't usually have so much time to make the suhoor meal so lavish. But, you know, quite apart from, obviously, if we keep the iftar simple, it means we're spending less time preparing, which means we've got more time for reflection, for dua, reading Quran, and so on during Ramadan. If we keep iftar simple, it also means we're not spending quite as much money for the iftar, which means maybe we've also, in theory, got a bit more money to give to charity, to give the people in need. But there's deeper reasons. You know, every single reason has many depths and layers to it anyway. But look, so there's a particular aspect of extravagant meals during, in particular during the holy month of Ramadan, that are quite tricky and something we need to be very aware of. So, for example, it said, so people who fast and observe lawful means for eating and drinking, but are excessive to the extent of extravagance, for example, during the iftar, are compared with those who eat and drink from unlawful means. So, you know, this is something that maybe not all of us are aware of. So, you know, we might well be very good at abstaining from eating and drinking during the day, and even abstaining from rude words and all the other bad traits. But look, if we have this sort of blemish-free day of fasting and we've done everything right, we've done all the good things, and then we sit down to a hugely extravagant meal of iftar, it seems that we're actually sort of put in the same group as those people who are eating and drinking from unlawful means. Welcome back. This is A to Z on RB English Radio. With me, Sister Zainab. And so I'm talking about many other reasons why we should keep our iftar simple, and this very deep and sort of very important reason that if we are considered extravagant, so if we're excessive or extravagant in our iftar meals, for example, well, we could apply it to suhoor, of course, too. We're put in the same group as those people who are drinking and eating from unlawful means. And so I'll just sort of explain this a bit more. So these people who do this, they're basically called slaves of their stomachs. We're not slaves of Allah if we're engaging in extravagant iftar meals. And you know, and many people will have maybe attended or at least be aware of some of these iftar meals where you know you've a huge spread, maybe you've got the simple things to break the fast with, and then you sit down to a very lavish meal with all the different vegetables and breads and maybe several meat dishes and so on, and then there comes more after that. So if we're doing that, we are slaves of our stomachs and we're not slaves of Allah, so obviously we don't want to be doing that. And so obviously it also, so these people are then called worshippers of the belly rather than sort of Allah's worshippers. And notice obviously this is so, and we know that lavishness and extravagance is forbidden and it's considered tantamount to a sin, the same as a sin. So what do we do? So obviously this is something we need to abstain from, definitely. So, inshallah, you bear this in mind because this is a really important point. We do not want to be grouped with people who are sort of drinking and eating from unlawful things. So please, when it comes to preparing iftar, just remind yourselves of this, inshallah. And so I pray that you gain just some extra reminders from today and look forward to welcoming you to another episode of HZ here on RB English Radio. And farewell for now. Thank you very much for listening to this episode of A to Z. And for more information, please also visit our website at www.iranradio.ir.
By having facilitated the wave of airstrikes by arming and funding the Israeli regime, as has been the practice of his predecessor Joe Biden, Donald Trump has proven yet again that far from being a peacemaker, he is a warmonger. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Please stay tuned for more. Palestine Chronicle wrote, Netanyahu's right-wing terror thugs Ben Gavir and Smotrich have not only welcomed the renewal of scorched earth policies, the fury and intensity of missile strikes and deadly bombings across the besieged Gaza Strip is not only the settler colonial regime's continuation of the genocide, but also a decisive rejection of the ceasefire it had signed. The regime's criminal leaders, particularly Benjamin Netanyahu, who is on the International Criminal Court's wanted list, have sought every pretext under the sun to resume massacres of innocent civilians. Despite the so-called lull in the interim period when the first phase of the ceasefire kicked in, the Israeli regime has been itching to shed more Palestinian blood to add to the thousands upon thousands of martyrs since October 7, 2023. Overnight, while displaced Palestinians who have been subject to the Zionist regime's inhuman blockade of food, fuel, medication, and other essentials, and smack in the middle of Ramadan, preparing suhoor meals in makeshift plastic tents and bomb